All right, ladies and gentlemen, it's that time once again for a very, very special episode of V8 Radio. This could be described as
an effulgent episode of V8 Radio, Kevin.
Effulgent?
Yeah, or effulgent, which means glowing with a radiant light.
Wow, it's effulgent.
And I am buzzing so much, I am glowing.
Well, for sure, for sure. So the reason why this episode is so very special is we are recording this live to record in the dead center of the center hall of the SEMA Show 2021.
And I'm actually present this time.
Yes, yes, you are, you are. So if you've heard our V8 Radio podcast before, I'm Kevin Oostie, joined as always by our esteemed co-host, Mr. Mike Cuball Clark. And we start every one of these episodes off with an automotive trivia question, which is why they came here.
Exactly.
So did you prepare, maybe not a special edition, but a trivia question for us?
Absolutely. And I thought long and hard about this one, Kevin.
I bet.
Uh-huh. All right. So I ask you, Kevin, what automaker was the first to offer seatbelts?
What automaker was the first to offer seatbelts?
Correct. And for a bonus, what year?
Okay, I'm gonna say it was the 1948 Tucker.
Ooh, that's nice. That's nice.
That's my guess.
You just came right at that. Final answer?
It is my final answer.
1948 Tucker, the man says.
And the Tucker Torpedo.
The 48 Tucker.
All and, right. You know, just a few years ago, not 50 feet from where we were sitting, our friend Rob Ida brought out a Tucker I believe it was a reproduction body, but it was a Tucker Torpedo on display at the Exalta Paint Booth right over there.
Nice.
Yeah, it was a teal green, and it was kind of a two-sided car. One side had big wheels and lowered suspension, and the other side had steelies with caps.
Oh, how cool is that?
There was two different ways to do the same car.
Very nice.
Yeah, that was cool.
It'd be neat to see some Tuckers on the road.
Oh, any.
Yeah.
A Tucker.
A Tucker.
Okay. I also have a question prepared. You ready?
Yes, sir.
See if I can get this right. So if you went out and bought a brand new 1963 Pontiac Tempest with the 326 V8 option.
Okay.
What engine was in it?
I have a feeling it's not the 326.
I don't know. Maybe it is. Maybe I just gave away.
Maybe he just gave it away.
Just to be, because I know we got a lot of distractions around here.
Yeah, okay. I need to stay focused. Oh, heavens to Betsy. Okay, so if you ordered a 1963 Tempest with a 326, what engine would you get?
Right. It's Pontiac, Tempest, small car.
You would get...
Thinking about Stan Antlosser and the world's fastest Tempest? That was a 421 Super Duty. That's not what you'd get.
Yeah. No. That Tempest was a cool car. It actually had a transaxle mounted in the back.
Yes.
The drive shaft was called a rope drive. It was flexible in nature. And it was manufactured that way to offer lower floor clearance, not a big drive shaft hump.
So it's less of a hump.
Less of a hump. But that doesn't answer the question.
No.
You would, okay. All right, guys, let's go. I'm going to say that the 326 wasn't offered or it wasn't available, and I'm going to say you would have gotten the four-cylinder, which was in essence a chopped in half V8, like a chopped in half 389.
Uh-huh.
And that's what you would have gotten.
So
the four cylinder.
63, you order up that 326, they say, not yet.
Not right now.
And we're gonna take a bandsaw.
it was a production engine, yeah, but yeah. It's a funny engine because if you look at it on one side, you swear you're looking at a V8. And you walk around the other side of the car, and you see nothing but, you know, an intake manifold and a carburetor and no other bank of cylinders.
Yeah. Those are cool. I've seen those before. It's surprising that they ran smoothly.
It is.
I've never experienced one of those running.
I haven't either. I think I've heard one run once at a show. That's okay. It.
Four cylinder. Were those exactly half a 389?
That would be
a 194 and a half?
Yeah, something like that. We'll call it a 195.
All right.
We'll round it up.
All right. It's final answer?
Yes, final answer.
Duly noted. As I'm noting. Well, so here we are, folks. It's great to be back at the SEMA show.
It is phenomenal to be back at the SEMA show. And this year, I'm able to take in everything to stay for the full week, or the full 4 days anyway, and enjoy everything I wasn't able to the last time I was here, and it's been phenomenal.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there's been a lot of different sentiments here. There's still kind of this disbelief that we are having disbelief about having a show.
I see.
Right? People still kind of in disbelief that this had to stop.
And I was surprised about that,
yeah,
to be honest with you.
We're all like, really? This didn't happen? But then it's like, really? This is happening again?
Yeah.
So a big concern was that early on in registration was very strong for the show, and then the Delta variant started coming around for the COVID mess, and people were getting concerned, so some people pulled out of the show, and that kind of started to feed itself, and other people were like, hey, I'm not going because of the Delta thing, and they're going to make us do, you know, somebody even suggested they're going to be giving vaccine shots like on the doorway to get in, you know,
oh,
just
gosh,
like all this extreme crazy stuff. And the SEMA organization was just maintaining the whole time, no, we're going to do whatever the city of Las Vegas says we have to do,
right,
which at the time was a mask mandate indoors.
Mm-hmm.
But you didn't have to show any identification, like a vax card or right, a recent COVID test. So then towards the end, as we got closer, a lot of companies realized that, well, you know, if it's just a mask thing, you know, no, we'll be in. We'll be back in.
Mm-hmm.
So then a lot of those people started coming back in. And today, we've got a show here.
We have a great show. There was a great presence here. There's a lot of people. It's not elbow to elbow, but there's reasons for that. Not just because attendance may be down, but there's a whole new million square feet of exhibition space that's available now.
Yeah, the new West Hall.
Yeah. So you can really spread out, mingle, and not be packed in like a can of sardines.
Right. And I don't know that a lot of people realize that this experience was going to spread out regardless because the West Hall was being built.
Correct.
Now, the funny thing is that hall just opened up this past July, so it would have been a construction mess in 2020.
Yes.
And I remember talking to Tom Gattuso, who's the VP that runs the show, back in 19, and he's like, "Yeah, I'm not sure how we're going to manage people going through all the construction and whatever."
Right.
Because they were also modifying the North Hall and all this stuff. So kind of in an act of serendipity, that got finished in time to where nobody had to experience that, but we are benefiting from all this extra space, so it's nice.
Yeah, it is nice. I took a quick peek in that West Hall earlier today, and it's great. It's huge.
It is huge.
It's mammoth.
I have not been over there yet. I was there in July for the SEMA Hall of Fame banquet. Was in that room.
Okay.
But they roped it off to make a little ballroom.
Oh, right. I remember you saying that.
Inside the giant room. So you didn't really know how big the place was.
Mm-hmm.
But now that is where all of the truck and off-road stuff is, right?
Yes. And vehicle accessories, like our friends at WeatherTech have a display in there. So other off-road things are there. But yeah, getting back to that thing, when they kind of enclosed it, it was like an exhibit hall within an exhibit hall. And,
yes.
And this is a show within a show.
Mr. Ashton, yes.
it's really happening.
So, yeah. So at this point, rather than talk about what the show is not, I want to talk about what it is.
Yes.
And it's been great. There are so many people here with this sense of relief to be able to reconnect and see industry connections that you've known and friends and make new ones. and you almost have to kind of kickstart yourself back into the mode of, yeah, let's get past the novelty of what happened and get back down to business.
Absolutely. People are making contacts. They are utilizing the show for what it's meant to be utilized for.
Yeah.
Making contacts, building your business, building your brand.
I saw Tom Gattuso, to mention him again, I saw him this morning, and he said the show process this year was very similar to starting a carbureted car that hadn't been run in a year and a half. The choke kind of sticks, and it sputters a little bit, and it blows some smoke, but pretty soon it heats up and starts smoothing out. And he said, so from the organization that handles the logistics, which is Freeman, mm-hmm. for those guys to get back in motion to building trade shows, to even the people scheduling air travel and hotels and the companies, everybody was a little bit shaky and smoky in the beginning, but then it clicked and everybody's rocking and rolling now.
Yes, everything's been super smooth here. Anytime I've had to talk to a SEMA staff member, it's like, hey, how do I get here, or when is this? They've been able to tell me immediately. Everybody's been professional, on the spot. All the showgoers seem to be really happy.
Yeah. And, I think we've distilled this down to the people that really want to be here are here.
Yes.
And that makes for a positive experience. And I've seen a lot of regret online. People are like, oh, man, I'm seeing the pictures. I'm seeing these halls are packed and these exhibitors are all there. And it's like, what did I do?
Well, you remember how you feel now for next year.
Correct. See you next year.
Yeah.
Another thing I heard today that was interesting, so I'm hosting the SEMA Central stage again through the whole week, and it's my duty to interview people from the SEMA organization and other notables and builders and whatnot. But this morning I had about 20 minutes with Chris Kersting, who's the president and CEO of SEMA, to try and just, pick his brain and see, what the organization's up to, but also feelings about stuff. And he said that this show is going to be the largest trade show held in North America this year.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
That's amazing. That's a heck of a stat. I did also read that this is the first full capacity trade show this year.
Anywhere. Yeah.
Anywhere.
Yeah. 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 I mean, it's on.
It is. It's on. Yeah. Definitely.
So, of course, many people have a perception that have never been here that SEMA is a car show, which it certainly is. There's a lot of cars here, feature vehicles, display cars, show cars. Have you seen stuff that has turned your crank a little bit?
Yeah. Actually, you mentioned it as we were walking out here to set up for this. The Mike Copeland's hydrogen-powered Chevy truck, that thing blows my mind.
Yes.
While it's blowing nothing but water out of the tailpipe.
Right. Oh, yeah. And this is interesting because the SEMA show is always a place where you see new trends and new directions and new technologies and whatnot. And Monday night, before the show opened, I also worked the SEMA Monday Night Reveal, which is where certain builders and automakers get a chance to bring their cars across a ramp thing. We do an interview with them before they go into the show for the final time to get set up. And it was EV heavy.
Yes.
There were a lot of electric vehicles, right? And, the hot rodding industry and the classic car guys have kind of this love-hate relationship with EVs. Mm. Like, they just love to hate them, I think.
Yeah. I think they don't get them quite yet, but a lot of it's a pretty significant change.
Oh,
so
it's a huge
there's going to be a lot of pushback, and there probably always will be. But I think more people will start realizing what a benefit electric vehicles are. It's from a power standpoint. I mean, full torque immediately.
Sure, there's definitely the selling points, and to me, and I think where people get a little bit testy is nobody wants to feel like they're going to have to do this. They're going to be forced.
Yeah, I get it.
They're going to outlaw internal combustion, and you're only going to be able to buy an EV, and I think that's the part that sucks. Because I think any genuine hot rodder says, oh my gosh, here's a way to make power instantly, like you're saying, and it's a whole new world of speed and fun, but it's like, as soon as you tell me I have to do something, I don't want to do it.
Yeah, I get that.
It's American nature.
Mm-hmm.
And that's,
it is.
That's what it feels like right now. The environmentalists, which again, no hot rodder wants to breathe dirty air and drink bad water and die young. That's not the point. But the people in power are largely discounting the passion of people who dig this stuff. And it's a giant industry, and it's a lot of people, employs a lot of people. It's a lot of people's, it's what they live for. And for a government agency to say, you can't do it anymore. Well, that's not cool.
No.
So all of a sudden, all EVs get kind of thrown into that hopper of the enemy. And it's not really the car, it's everything around it.
Right. And not to get too political, but that's why it's important that people read up and get their congressman to pass the RPM Act, which is very important to the SEMA organization and very important for hot rodders in general to preserve our way of life.
Yes, and I think we're going to dive into that a little bit more in just a sec. So one of the things that came across the as far as the EVs that we saw at the Monday Night Reveal, the Hummer EV Super Truck, they're calling it.
Oh wow!
So it's a huge full size Hummer. They brought the Hummer name back, and it's a GMC badge product. It's like 1,000 horsepower, and the EV world measures torque differently. Because they claim it's 12,000 foot-pounds.
Oh.
But it's not, in a gas engine, they measured at the crank, and then there's the torque multiplication that goes through the transmission and through the rear gears. I think the EV guys just take that multiplied number right away and throw it out there. So, but regardless, an incredibly capable machine that came up the ramp silently, which was a little weird.
Yeah.
For something that big, you would think it'd make some noise. And there's a sidebar on that, because that truck was outfitted with dozens of accessories, but that were made by General Motors.
Oh.
So there's over 250 accessory parts for that truck available today.
Oh my gosh.
All made by GM. And I thought, well, here we are at the SEMA show, which is the world's biggest aftermarket industry show, and General Motors, we talked about this before, do OEMs belong at the SEMA show? But here they are bringing their own
aftermarket stuff.
Yes, their own. So that's interesting. Are they what they've identified is that there's a huge piece of the pie from a business standpoint in personalization and accessories. And what my thought is, people are going to be able to buy that rack and that they even have a tent and for overlanders and all that stuff from the dealer, maybe finance it with the build of the truck, but at the same time, the aftermarket's gonna come out with cooler stuff, and people are gonna be like, I don't want that GM.
Right. I want this other cool thing.
That's right, I want this one from from Superlift or from whatever. Yeah. So that was one of the EVs. There's a television show out that's hosted by Ann Anstead and Christy Lee called Celebrity IOU Joyride.
Okay.
And the latest edition, one of the later episodes, features an electrified 1963 Buick Electra. And I think we talked about that before.
Yeah, we have.
Car came out really cool. It's got a carbon fiber hood. And they took a Karma Rivero and electric car and just peeled the body off and threw the Buick body on it. The wheelbase was only 30 centimeters off.
Oh, wow.
Which,
that's significant.
Not much, though. No. You think an electric vehicle to a 63 Buick to be, an inch?
30 centimeters?
Yeah.
No, that's more than that. You mean 30 millimeters.
Yeah, I guess so. 30 millimeters. Yeah. I don't know, it changes about an inch and a half.
So okay.
Not much.
In that respect, no, that's not much.
But they had to widen the track a little bit and do some real fabrication. But to hear a silent old Buick was a little bit weird. But the car, the premise of that show is they team up with a celebrity who recognizes that somebody helped them along the way be successful.
You.
And the celebrity has Ant and his team with Christy build the car. And then they go and present the car to the worthy person.
Moment of silence, please.
Yeah.
Mr. Chip Foose just entered the room.
Yeah, right. Here he is. And so here we are at SEMA, and where we're sitting right now is in the SEMA launch pad display. And launch pad is it's the automotive equivalent of Shark Tank.
Sure.
So it's all these entrepreneurs with new ideas that came out, and they presented them to a team of judges. One of them is Chip Foose. And it was a television series, and coming up tomorrow night at the SEMA banquet, they're going to award the winner of the Launchpad,
sure,
who's going to get $100,000
to right, be able to
develop and retail their products. Some of these products, I think, are actually available for sale already since the start. Others are just, you know, ideas. So they created this little lounge section with tables and stuff where you can check all these things out. So that's where Mike and I are. And Foose, being one of the judges, just walked in, and he's getting his picture taken by the Mech Magnet right now, which is a stick-on magnetic protection film for Jeeps, which is kind of a neat idea.
Very nice.
There he is, sticking his head through the window. So, anyway, we had that EV Buick, and so here's a funny thing, right? I've got, and the celebrity for that particular episode is James Marsden, and James has done a lot of voices for, like, you know, Sonic the Hedgehog films, and mm-hmm. he was in Anchorman 2, and he's done a bunch of, you know, HBO and Netflix series, and, right. and so he's an A-list actor.
Yeah, he's legit. He's the real deal.
So we're talking to him on stage with Anstead, and somebody, the guy that they're going to gift this car to is in the audience. His name is Will. It's Marsden's brother.
Oh, okay.
And I'm looking at this thing, and the car was so big it wouldn't come up the ramp because it was too low and it was going to high side on our thing. So the car's down below us. Well, I'm looking down on it, and I see this carbon fiber hood. And Anstead is telling us about the hood, that they had this molds made, and this guy made this special carbon fiber hood. And I noticed that in the early 60s, Buick would do different lengths of their Electras, there was one that was a Park Avenue, which was actually a shorter trunk.
Oh,
and,
really?
Yeah, and I think they called it the Park Avenue because it was more conducive to city parking, is my guess.
Oh,
but this was
okay,
a stubby one. And I told that story, and everybody in the audience is like, we don't know, we don't care, you know. And Kelly was in the audience, she's like, yeah, only OSD knows about this stupid Buick trivia, whatever. So right after the event, and I had mentioned that we have a 62 Electra in our shop, being Paul's car, and we, you know, commented on that. It's not electric, of course. But the guy that made the hood sends his business card over saying, hey, man, do you want a hood for yours? And I'm like, oh, my gosh.
The last thing Paul needs.
But yeah, so no, we're not going to buy a carbon hood for that car because it's going to be worth the, you know, five times the value of the car, and that's not the purpose. But how cool is that?
That is great.
That if anybody, you know, and such an obscure part is a custom carbon hood for an old Buick, just in conversation, here's a guy.
Yeah. It's repeatable now. He can make it.
Yeah. So that was another one of the EVs. So there's a lot of them here. But the big one was Project X.
Yes. I heard a little bit about that shortly before the SEMA reveal that was going to be here. And that kind of surprised me. At first, I thought, why would they do that? But then I realized that's what Project X is. It's a test bed for powertrains.
So yeah, that's what Project X was all about. And for those who don't know the car, right? So back in 1965, Popular Hot Rod Magazine, which was an Argus publication back then, I guess, or McMullen, set out to do a long-term magazine serial project car.
Yeah.
And at the time, in the mid-60s, you could buy a 57 Chevy pretty cheap. You know,
I think they paid $250 for it.
They paid $250 for a 57 210 sedan that they found in Santa Monica. Oh, here comes Chip.
Hey, Chip.
How are you?
I'm doing great. How you doing, buddy?
Good to see you. How you been? Good.
Great.
Right on.
See you later.
See you later, buddy. Nice to see you.
I know you're busy. You just want to shake your hand.
Hey, thanks. Doing a great job on the judging.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
It's a pleasure.
We'll see you Thursday. That's Alex. He's last year's one of the Manufacturer of the Year award for red line detection. Manufacturer here at SEMA last year. So
very nice.
Yeah, and the other guy, I think his name was Chip.
I've heard. I think is that his name?
You asked for this one, folks. It's a live show, right? Okay. So anyway, Project X. Yeah. So it was a Canyon Coral 210 tan top, tan two-tone interior with a 283, 260 horse power pack V8 under the hood. Mm. And immediately they go to work changing stuff on the car.
Sure.
And they would I don't know, bolt some headers on it, write a story, say what it did, come back next month, see how it performed next month, and what are we going to do next time? Mm. And the thing has been appearing in magazine stories for like 50 years.
Yeah.
Anybody who read Popular Hot Rodding knows this car. Mm-hmm. It, all, it was, of course, was also featured in Hollywood Nights.
Yes.
Tony Danza's car and Michelle Pfeiffer.
With a small block blower in it.
Yep. And so the I think it's had 12 different drivetrains in it over the years. So, and it was neat because people would write in saying, hey, could you do this?
See, that's great. You get audience input in that.
Yeah, it was interactive before that was a word.
Yeah.
You know? So here we go in 2017, I think. It got restored because the life of any magazine project car is pretty rough.
I bet, yeah.
Because it, in many ways, it doesn't have an owner. Whoever's working on it is working on it as an editor, but they don't own the car. So, sure. And they're up against editorial deadlines, and stuff doesn't fit, and you know how the deal is. So the car lived a pretty rough life of getting its guts ripped out and put back in and over again. So they decided to restore this car, and they worked with Chevrolet, who brought it in and basically redid the whole car. They did a very nice job. But they changed the image of the car from kind of your 70s street machine to a more pro touring style.
Yes.
LS motor, flat hood, bigger wheels, brakes. Doing what Project X does, changing every couple of years. Yeah. There's Miles Kovacs.
Oh, yeah. Miles Kovacs, former guest of the show.
Former guest of the show, 2020 Person of the Year, and also another judge here at Launchpad. Yeah.
Founder of Dub Magazine.
That's it, yeah. But when they put the LS in the thing, people lost their minds.
I don't get it.
Just doing what Project X does.
It's what Project X is.
They lost their minds. Well, now they do the electric thing, and people are like jumping off cliffs. I mean, they've lost more than their minds. Right. So all over social media on Monday afternoon. So Chevrolet, well, under the popular hot rodding brand, Motor Trend brand, action Hot Rod. Hot Rod kind of owns it now because that magazine's long gone. Popular Hot Rodding. They start releasing a little video of Cagnazzi Motorsports, who did the electric conversion. Mm. It's going to be a Motor Trend television thing. I don't know what show is going to carry it, but you'll be able to watch it on Motor Trend. Put a little teaser video out Monday morning. People go nuts.
Oh, they had to know people were going nuts, too.
Well, yeah, because here we are a week after Chevrolet releases the 632 big block 1,000 horsepower crate motor, which would have been a shoe-in for Project X.
Yes.
It kind of fits the mold. It would have been expected.
Mm-hmm.
And when they release this video, people... So I'm seeing all these things online, like obituaries, Project X is dead, and they ruined this car, and how could they mess with such an icon, and blah, blah, blah. Meanwhile, in like 3 hours, I have to unveil this thing in public to this angry mob.
Nice.
And I got to walk the line, you know, because I didn't build the car.
Right.
And I, as a host, you want to be enthusiastic about what's coming across. But do I like this? Do I not? Does it matter if I do or not? But it's got to be presented positively, but not too positively. You know, right. What do you do? And I texted you about it.
Yeah.
And you're like, screw them. If they don't like this thing,
if they don't like it, they don't get it. Exactly what I said. I said, then they don't understand what Project X is about. You may not like it, but you have to accept that that's what it's meant to be. That's what it is. And people are too emotional over that particular car because it is an icon.
It is.
And people want to see, they want to see what they want to see.
They want to see what they're used to and everything else. And that's the funny thing because, yes, so the LS or the small block guys got upset when they put an LS in it, and now the LS guys are upset they put an electric in it. And again, this is meant to change.
Yes.
And they're like, oh, they should restore it back to the way it was in Hollywood Nights. Well, it was already that.
Yeah, yeah.
Now it's time to be something else.
We're moving forward. And I did see the blurb on that, and they said this is the last motor they'll ever put in it. But I don't know if I buy that, because I think what they meant was they'll never have an internal combustion engine in it ever again. But even so, I don't know if they're going to hold to that, because things always change.
Yeah. And there might be a little bit of marketing spin on that as well. Yeah. That's controversial. And the controversy got us talking about it on this episode right now. So, yeah. I mean, there's that for sure.
Yeah, they got us.
Yeah. So the car comes out. It's dead silent. You know, it rolls up the ramp. And Stephen Rupp, who's a tech editor on Hot Rod Magazine, he jumps out, as does a GM engineer who headed up the project with Cagnazzi down in Florida, I believe. And immediately kind of go into defense. Rupp does anyway. Mm. And he's like, look, you know, this is something new. It's different. And who knows? Project X changes all the time. Next time it might have a Mr. Fusion in it. And it might fly. You know, right? So nice. Cool your jets was kind of his message, which was great. I wish I could remember the GM guy's name because he's brilliant. He's with their performance powertrain. And he said, this is some pretty high-tech stuff in this car. And it was not part of the Chevrolet reveal. It stood alone later. It was a little distance between Chevrolet and Project X. It wasn't shown as like a GM performance thing. It was its own deal.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And I later learned why. And it's because the technology in Project X is from the future. You cannot buy this today.
No kidding.
They are developing this right now. This is like beyond leading edge. And Chevrolet felt that if they roped it in with their other vehicles, people would start calling saying,
I want to buy that.
I want to buy it.
Is that available in a crate motor? You know,
exactly.
An
E-crate or whatever. And no, you can't. So they didn't want to mislead the public. Okay. And they wanted what's more experimental than that?
Yeah.
So he told a great story about that. And I kind of walked the line. And I had to realize I tend to take ownership of what I'm doing in those situations as a host, but I had to release that. It's not my car. It's not really my purpose to endorse or discredit.
Right.
It's my job to let the people tell the story. So I'm letting them tell the story. You know, you make up your own mind. But I felt the need to kind of wrap this up somehow that would hopefully make sense to everybody. So I took the approach, which I fully believe. I said, look, if it doesn't really matter to me if you want to put a gas motor in or put an electric engine and motor, switch those, gasoline engine, electric motor in. But what I value is that today we still have the freedom to do so.
Yes.
And that's a thing.
It's a real thing.
Yes.
It's everything.
Because there are those who legitimately do not want us to have that freedom anymore.
No.
And it gets back to mandating electric motors and whatnot. So you had mentioned the RPM Act, and the RPM Act is, on the outset, it's designed to help people keep the legal ability to turn a production vehicle into a race car.
Mm-hmm.
But it does have further reaching implications to educate Congress to say, look, these guys, you with your GTO, when you drive it twice a month, you're not killing the planet.
Right.
You know?
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. You get it.
Yeah, you can feel better about driving
it.
I don't think you could feel better about driving that car than I think about it. So as soon as people understand that we're a small faction, race cars in particular, you know, and a highly well-tuned performance car, race car, is going to pollute far less than somebody's daily driver who doesn't upkeep it.
Right.
You know? So I was talking with Chris Kirsting this morning about the RPM Act and about some of this other stuff, and I spoke with one of the SEMA lawyers, one of the guys that works in Washington, and I said, I've been seeing a lot of the RPM Act, but some of it almost seems like a promotional tool for SEMA. Some of it seems like it's like an in-house thing, just like a marketing scam. You know, tell me about it. And he's like, well, no, it's absolutely not.
Yeah.
It's just the fact that SEMA is so very much behind this, and they're promoting it so much because it's important. So at the end of the day, what's cool is that starting now, basically a couple months ago, SEMA is now doing individual memberships.
Is that right?
Yes. The first time in over 50 years, an individual can join SEMA. You no longer have to be a company, a manufacturer.
Really?
Or any kind of company.
Sure.
And the reason why they did that is to increase the volume of the voice that SEMA brings to Washington, right?
Uh-huh.
So right now there's 6,000 or some odd member companies, and
okay.
Congress looks at it and they go, yeah, we got 6,000 people, 6,000 companies on this petition, whatever. But, you know, there's millions
yeah.
of enthusiasts. So if you say, I've got a petition here that's got, you know, 10 million people on it, plus 6,000 manufacturers, well, now you got far more muscle.
Yeah, a lot more bite.
And the passion level is the same for everyone. You, me, the guy with the electric car, the guy with the truck, whatever. Mm. So I thought that was pretty cool, and I think that's something that's definitely worth sharing. So if you're interested in being an individual member, you go to the SEMA website, and there's a thing you can sign up on to do it. And I asked what it came with, and they said, well, it's $40, so it's not bad.
No.
And you get a free hat, and I said, you mean you get a $40 free hat?
Nice.
But it puts you on a newsletter so that you will get all the updated information. You'll get
cool.
the petitions to sign. You'll and you get to be a part of keeping this stuff available.
So I want to dig into that a little bit about an individual being a SEMA member. Does that individual have to work for a aftermarket company or a
no.
manufacturer? It can be, if I work for
a copier company?
A copier company. Hypothetically speaking.
Yeah, you can join.
Then I could join.
Yeah.
That's huge.
It's a game changer.
And then those people could come to SEMA.
So here's the thing. I don't know the depth of
how
all
far
the benefits.
It is. Okay.
Because they still, this is a trade show.
Yeah, that's true.
And people pay, I think you pay more for different resources.
Sure.
You know, kind of, as you should. So like any SEMA member company today can go use the SEMA garage, you know, scanners and 3D printers, but you pay for them. But the privilege comes by being a member.
Okay.
So being an individual member, it might get your foot in the door to access some of the other services if you want to pay for them. But I don't know if it's a ticket into the show or not, and it's a great question that I should ask.
Even if it's not, that's a game changer, that an individual can be a SEMA member.
Yeah, and I'm just thinking the logistics, because in the biggest show that I think they ever had here was 2019, and somebody said there was 180,000 people. If we have 10 million enthusiasts with a golden ticket,
yeah.
this show's going to be just washed down the river, right? It's just
but think about that. 180,000 people represented by 6,000
yeah.
companies.
Yeah. Well, so here's the other thing. You don't have to be a member to come to the show.
That's right.
You just have to be a member of the trade.
Okay, that's right.
You got to be a working professional in the industry.
Yeah, I misspoke. Sorry.
Yeah. So there was more people than companies for sure because people come here that are not a member company. And they try to sign them up to make them members while they're here. But yeah, and PRI did the same thing. There's an individual PRI membership too for the performance racing industry.
Cool.
And it's dynamite. So it's really great to see people are serious about perpetuating what we do and what we enjoy and keeping our freedoms alive and available for us now and in the future. Because
and by SEMA allowing your individual to be a member, it really gives them the opportunity to do something about it. People who really feel they want to do something, now they have an avenue to do so.
Yes, and I think so many people really want to do something and have no idea where to start.
Good point.
You know, I'm a guy in my garage. Washington's over there. These crazy politicians. You know, they. I can't even reach them. They won't listen to me.
Yeah. Otherwise, you're just screaming at the in the air.
Yelling at the cloud.
Yeah.
Yeah. So now that's changed. So that's a huge thing. And is the presence of all these EVs. And I think there's 40 companies here displaying some sort of conversion apparatus. To build your own EV.
Yeah, I saw some of those.
Is that the future? You know, that's a whole other debate, another discussion, because, you know, is there infrastructure?
I think there's going to be a market for that.
Well, I'll tell you right now, there are a lot of companies here displaying performance parts for EVs.
Hmm, interesting.
So the Ford booth right behind us has the Tian Edition Ford Mach-E and a Mustang built by this guy, Neil Tian. And it's full, the Mach-E is full of appearance products, different lighting, different wheels, different audio, all the stuff you do to any other car. And then they change some of the electronics to the way it drives and stuff like that. So they're still hot rodding them. It's just a different platform.
And for anybody who thinks that the Mach-E is a flop, it's outselling the regular Mustang.
Is it really?
Yeah, that was one of the stats they said during that unveiling the other day. Yeah, so I mean, it's real.
Well, so I think the cards were stacked a little bit in that respect because the Mach-E is a far more functional vehicle than a Mustang. You can fit more people in it, you can carry some stuff.
Yeah.
Mustangs don't, I mean, they sell a lot, but it's not their.
But if the Mach-E
was a flop, it
was a flop, they wouldn't, it wouldn't be selling.
Yeah, and that's true.
Yeah,
interesting. So I was, speaking personally, I was pretty let down by the fact that Project X literally crept up and scared me as it pulled up on stage because I did not hear it coming.
Well, that's interesting. I mean, that's the more prevalent that EVs are on the road, it's going to change a lot because you can hear a car coming.
Yeah.
You can't hear an electric car coming.
No.
Especially if it's slow.
Right.
You need like a human horn or something, like beep, 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 and not like a full-blown get out of my way horn.
Well, can you imagine like just if everything has like a reverse signal, beep, beep, all these things driving around, especially autonomous, electric, silent killers.
Yeah, no doubt.
Well, and I just, that part I don't like. I don't like the fact that they're quiet. I understand it, but especially if you go to a performance situation, if you're on a racetrack or you're on a country road and you're rolling through the gears, do you roll through the gears anymore? And B, to do it silently, sure, it's speed and it's handling and it's visceral, but I like the sound.
I like that engine sound. Yeah, I do. I agree.
Which gets us back to Arrington Performance and Mike Copeland and that hydrogen pickup truck that was unveiled, which I need to learn more about. But that he's working on a conversion kit to take a gasoline internal combustion engine and convert them to hydrogen.
So keep the core engine, but just convert it to run on hydrogen.
Yes. So now we get to keep our cylinder heads, and now we get to keep the sound and the performance modifications that we're aware of and that we know and love. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty cool.
That's
just running
cool.
And I think hydrogen is the future. And I was trying to think, well, why haven't people gotten on board with hydrogen powered stuff? And I think it's because it's basically free fuel, right? You know, who's going to profit?
Yeah, I mean, well, it has to be manufactured or come from somewhere. Well, someone's selling it. So, but there's not.
But didn't the BMW hydrogen? They did a 7 Series, not production, but I think it literally split water up. I think you put water
like
in it.
More electrolysis?
And it made hydrogen gas with electrolysis.
Yeah, yeah. So there's going to be some powerful people not liking that.
Yeah, because, so the environmentalists and the people that like water, like myself, are going to say, well, now you're taking our natural resource of water that we need to survive and turning it into a fuel product, which means it's an abuse. The same way they talk about ethanol as corn that could feed somebody or whatever.
Except it's not a waste because your emissions are water and it evaporates back up into the sky and goes where it needs to go.
Right. Yeah. It's kind of
a win-win.
Yeah, it really is. So it's fascinating. And again, it took just this little trip. I've only been here 2 days and look at how much stuff we've absorbed and learned and saw just by that. And you and I did not set out to come to this show to seek out any of that.
No, did not. I was not expecting the big EV presence out here. I mean, I should have if I would have stopped and thought about it, because it started with that Ecopo Camaro a couple of years ago.
Yes.
That GM Chevrolet displayed. I mean, it's all kind of, since then, electrics have just gained in popularity. I mean, Tesla is still selling like crazy.
Oh yeah.
So it's where the market's heading.
Yes, it is. And I think the Ecopo was more of a statement vehicle.
Sure, yes.
I think they were trying to say that electric is high performance.
Yeah, and we can do it.
Yeah, because you can't beat this car. It's faster than you. but this, and that's the best part. You and I have talked about the SEMA moment concept of something happens here that you're not anticipating and it changes everything. And again, I was telling Chris Kirsting about that concept this morning in our interview, and he hadn't heard that before. And he's like, that's an awesome observation. You're right. That's what happens here. So unfortunately for those who didn't come, because there are ways to market products in different ways in coming to the show.
Right, right.
Online and other types of things. And some people have said, yeah, you know, I don't need to do that. I don't need to spend the money because I can just, I'll run more Google ads or more Facebook,
right,
you know, boosted posts or posts in a group somewhere. Yeah, but you're not going to get...
You're not going to get this.
All the rest of it, yeah. Chip Foose interrupting your podcast.
Yes, shaking my hand and saying, I'm doing great.
Was that the same hand or the other one?
Not same here. Hand.
Oh, man.
I'm not watching it ever again.
too funny.
He was right here.
Yep. So I think this will be the first of probably a couple episodes that come out of this experience because we really didn't talk about any cool parts or anything. I mean, this is just side... nonsense, but it's totally worthy, you know.
Yeah, this show is just it's every car guy's dream. It really is.
Yeah, and I know we talked about Foose a minute ago, but one of the things here this year is the Chip Foose Experience, and it's what 20 cars, 20 Foose cars, including four Riddler winners, and two or three AMBR America's Most Beautiful Roadster winners. And then a whole bunch of overhauling cars and other TV cars and then other stuff that he built long ago. The earliest one is from 1996. It's the Boyd Air.
The Boyd Air, yes.
Which is one of my all-time favorites.
See, it's funny because until now, I'd never heard of the Boyd Air.
Oh, no kidding.
And I'm ashamed of myself for this.
Yeah, you should be.
I am, thoroughly. What a great concept, though.
Yeah, so he took a 59... Chevrolet platform and did it like a 57 Chevy, so it's the earlier car on a bigger
chassis,
proportion, so it's long and it's low and it's just killer.
It is.
And there's a fun trivia question there because I was talking to Chip about it the other day before the show opened, and he said, you know, that we actually started with an Oldsmobile, we didn't start with an Impala.
That's
not great. That it mattered so much, but and that car, he took it on Power Tour in 97. And it doesn't have a top, and they went over the Rockies, and it got snowed in.
Oh, my goodness.
And then Jim Savage tells me, he was a publisher of Hot Rod at the time, he was in a 32 Highboy cruising with Roy Brizio and another Roadster and Foose, and they went through St. Louis, and Savage and Brizio end up at a red light next to each other, so of course they rev the engines a little bit, you know, they're getting ready to, who knows. They all get pulled over immediately, and Savage is up against the wall and
oh my, you know,
basically in bracelets in St. Louis. And he's like, yeah, ask Chip about that. So I can ask him about that. But
that's
just one of the awesome cars that are on display here. So I don't think there's ever been four Riddler winners together.
Probably not.
And then there's at least two more here. So it's SEMA Central is the 63 Chevy wagon that won last year.
Yes.
That's parked in front. I think there's another one here, too.
So for people who don't know, the Riddler winner comes from the Detroit Auto Show.
The Detroit Autorama.
Detroit Autorama, excuse me. And that is your top, like your overall winner, is the Riddler Award, correct?
Yeah, it is. It's the most prestigious indoor custom car award there is.
And that was after Bob Riddler?
Don Riddler.
Okay. That's true. And America's
Bob Larravee put the show on.
Okay. I got my...
Your Bob and Don's mixed up, guy.
Sorry, my head is swimming.
Yeah,
I can't keep it straight. And America's Most Beautiful Roadster comes from what show?
That comes from the Grand National Roadster Show, which used to be the Oakland Roadster Show, and then they moved it to Los Angeles. It's in Pomona now.
Very nice.
So the top, you know, winners, you know, for sure. The Imposter, which is the shortened 65 Impala.
Yes.
That's here.
Yes, I saw that.
Yeah.
Took a few shots of that.
The Impression, the Grandmaster, Chip's own Ford pickup truck, the Hemisphere, looks like a Hot Wheels car, it's a full-on custom. Mm. The Eldorad.
Yep.
Right, so Boyd Air was built at Boyd Hot Rods by Boyd, obviously, when Chip worked there. Mm. And the Eldorad is kind of Cadzilla Part 2. It was a 48 Cadillac as well, but it was done in a convertible instead of the sedanette fastback version. And when they first built that car, it was maroon. And then went to Chip Shop, and he stripped and repainted it in kind of that imperial blue that it's in now. Amazing car.
Sure. All of those cars are just mwah with their finish and the craftsmanship and how everything fits and just how everything has changed. You don't even notice it immediately. That's how subtle and beautiful they are.
And the creativity behind them. Mm. And so today I think a lot of people, Chip Foose, blah, blah, blah. And people think he's a sketch artist and whatever, a TV hero and all that crap. Yeah. But when you look back at like the last 30 years to see the level of stuff that this guy has been turning out over and over and over again.
Complete master.
And then I've learned about all the charity functions that he's raised money for, and he's got a foundation he's working on right now.
Nice.
He apparently had a younger sister that died in 85, and she had that super rare disease where the
progeria.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes, where you age rapidly.
Yes,
or seemingly so.
And, you know, you're 10 years old, and you look like you're 100.
Yes,
she was 3.5 feet tall and weighed 65 pounds or something, 50 pounds. So he's got a foundation raising money for that.
Very nice.
I mean, it's pretty solid. The guy's definitely worthy of all this recognition for sure.
Yes,
and he's cool enough to come over and hang out with us every once in a while.
Appreciate it, Chipper.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
It's crazy. This event, it's something else. So,
yeah,
he got a special award Monday night at the reveal as well.
What?
SEMA presented him with a special award Monday night. Just Kirsten came out on stage and went down the list of all of these things over the past couple decades that this guy's done. And in typical fashion, Chip keeps interrupting him, saying, no, thank you for letting me bring my car here.
Yeah.
I know, shut up, man.
Shut up.
This is for you. And they presented him with a big crystal trophy, a SEMA award of recognition of some sort.
That's real cool.
It was. It was. Man. So, we could go on for days, but I can't because I have to go to the Motor Trend stage and talk about something, and I don't even know what it is yet.
Right on.
So, we should get our trivia questions out there.
Yes. Okay. Let's do that. All right. So, I asked you, Kevin, what automaker was the first to offer seat belts? And you said 1948 Tucker. And now I'm questioning my answer because you might be right about that. The answer I had was Nash Motors in 1949.
Huh? Well,
I can see Tucker doing that.
Well, that was one of the things that they say the other OEs put them out of business for, is by introducing seat belts. It planted a seed that cars weren't safe.
Oh.
And they're like, we can't have people saying cars aren't safe with this silly seatbelt nonsense. So the conspiracy theorists say that that's one of the things that they went after him for.
All right. Well, and that said, I'm going to give it to you.
Hey,
congratulations.
Right on. All right. On.
Nice. Well done, sir.
All right.
He's a winner at SEMA and in trivia.
Yeah, it's only a special episode.
Yeah.
Okay, if you bought a 63 Pontiac Tempest with a 326 V8 option, what engine was in it? And you said it was a 195 and a half,
four cylinder,
half a 389. Well, the correct answer, I'm sorry. That I think that four cylinder was available, okay?
Yeah. Well, I know it was available.
But if you ordered a 326, you actually got a 336.
Shut your mouth.
Which was a Pontiac built engine for GMC trucks.
Really?
Built from 59 to 62.
But it was in a 63.
For 1 year only.
Dude.
Right?
Come on.
Yes.
Oh, gee whiz.
For 1 year only, it ended up being in the Tempest. And it measured 336 cubes. The Pontiac identified it as a V326. And on the emblems.
I'm going to break your wheel of trivia. I don't like it anymore.
Well, you're in luck because the wheel has officially gone flat at this point.
Right on.
Out of questions.
Nice.
I did have one that you might have heard, and that was what automotive company has won an Olympic medal? Did you hear that one?
You've said this once before.
It was told to me yesterday.
Was it?
Yeah. by Ant Anstead.
Yeah, it's Lotus.
It's Lotus.
That's right.
Lotus made a bicycle that one.
Yeah, because they made bicycles.
Great question.
Phenomenal question. Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. Tell him he wrecked that one for you.
Yeah. Well, we'll see how fried your mind gets. I might ask
you
that next
you might
time.
Ask. It's like, dude, I don't know, man.
The Duryea.
Duryea. I might have another Duryea question on tap.
Nah, I don't doubt it. All right. Well, hey, listen, friends, thanks for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed our little tangents here on a trip to the SEMA show. We're going to do at least another more episode about SEMA.
Cool.
Maybe not from here, but when we get back, because there's so much to see and do. Thank heavens there's so much going on.
Oh, for sure.
This is great.
Outrageous. I love it.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Well, if you dig this, click that subscribe button so you don't miss the next one. And for Mr. Mike Hubal Clark, I'm Kevin Oostie saying, hey, next opportunity you get to go to an awesome car event, go do it, because we've seen that they can go away, right? So take advantage. We'll see you next time on VIA Radio.